Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Happy Friday, everybody. Happy Brewers Outlet Day. And you know what? Stock up for the Daytona 500 this weekend. Should be a lot of fun. And great to have you with us on the show today. Brought to you by our great friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, lots and lots of snacks. You know what? They roast their peanuts freshen out every day. Six great flavors of slushies. Pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills. Indeed, second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. If you're out wondering why I throw in the barrels and the dills, that's because they're my two personal favorites. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory with great warranties. Pre-owned inventory, they go over with a fine-tooth comb. That's why they end up with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. And a terrific service department. They're always looking for new technicians. Great group to work with because they take care of all the routine stuff and they take care of the difficult stuff. They're just the best. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. It is an all-star Hall of Fame edition today. Hall of Fame edition. Baseball Hall of Famer Tim Kirchen. Right? Football Hall of Famer Ray Dittinger. And on this show, Hall of Famers Neil Coulong, Nate Bauer. It's all coming up on today's show. Looking forward to that very much as we head into the weekend. Penn State basketball tomorrow, Nebraska. And that game will be at Pinnacle Bank Arena at noon, which is 11 o'clock Central Time. And we'll be on the air at 11:30 Eastern Time, 10:30 Central. So it's going to be an early wake-up call. That's fine. That doesn't bother me. People always ask me about, you know, those Central Time Zone games are 11 a.m. Man, that just means that, look, you get going with the game. I love that. And guess what? You get home sooner. Right. Nebraska's playing really well. If the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee is making their selections today, Nebraska's in. They have only lost one game at home. And that was back in November when Creighton worked their way down from Omaha and blew them out. But after that, they've won every game in that arena, including Purdue and Wisconsin. They've always been a really good home team. They're terrific this year. All right, coming up, we will talk with Tim Kirchen as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet.
Want to work for a stable yet growing company? Got it. Want to work for a family-owned business with over 100 years' experience in taking care of customers and employees? Got it. Want to work for a leader in selling more cars and satisfying more customers? Got it. Who has all that? SMC Sunbury Motor Company is looking for technicians across all their departments. Whether you're an entry-level technician, an experienced technician, or someone looking for a career change, Sunbury Motors would love to hear from you. They're looking for technicians for their quick lane, car and light truck service, heavy truck service, body shop, and frame and alignment division. You can apply online at sunburymotors.com, in person at our North 4th Street location, or call Todd at 570-286-7746. Your new career of working on Fords, Kias, Hyundais, Western Star trucks, plus anything that fits in the door and some things that don't. Join Sunbury Motors. Your new career is waiting for you.
Welcome back. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, lots and lots of snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. Pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. A lot of baseball news to get into, and of course we'll bring in the Hall of Famer himself, Tim Kirchen. It was so great to see you at Williamsport last month. We were at the hot stove dinner together. Tim, welcome back.
Well, as you know, Steve, Williamsport is one of the great venues in this country. It's my favorite assignment every year. Carl Ravitch told me 8 years ago, he said, first time you go there, you won't even know what it's about, and you'll say, this is the greatest assignment. And 8 years later, he's still right about that. So I come back to Williamsport every off season and help out with the banquet because the people there are so great. I had so much fun, and boy, it was a great banquet this year. Kent DeColvey made me laugh out loud a bunch of times.
He did. He was tremendous. He really was. Great stories across the board. The Orioles are going to leave the Angelos realm, and they've been sold. This is a young team. What potentially does this mean to the future of the Orioles, especially with the young players they have now?
Yeah, I think this is great for the franchise because it was clear with the Angelos family in charge, because they said it publicly, that affording players long-term is not going to be easy. And when you have Gunnar Henderson and Jackson Holliday and, you know, Adley Rutschman, you have to get these guys locked up as quickly as possible, which we're seeing all across the game. I mean, it started, you know, with the Indians in the 90s, but the Braves have brought it to an art form on how to take young guys and wrapping them up so the future is bright for years and years. That's what's going to happen since two billionaires are going to buy this team, get the whole team eventually. And if I was an Oriole fan, I would be thrilled that the right people are now in charge to eventually make sure that the best young talent doesn't get away.
And then there's another element too, because as part of the public negotiation, there was the dangling of the lease at Camden Yards. Baltimore is such an awesome sports town. I don't have to tell you that. I mean, what does this mean long-term future about Orioles baseball in Baltimore?
Well, fortunately, it means the Orioles aren't going anywhere, nor did I ever think they were going anywhere. But still, this is great comfort for Oriole fans to know that the team will be here forever and ever, because it's a great baseball town. I grew up about 50 miles away from there, and the town has been reinvigorated by baseball and by the Orioles. You should have seen that. I'm sure you did, Steve. You should have seen that place in the heart of the pennant race last year. It was breathtaking to be there, and I covered their series at home against the Rangers on the radio with Carl Ravitch. And even though they lost two games there in Baltimore, the atmosphere in the ballpark was tremendous. And that's what everyone has to look forward to with this sale, with Cal Ripken on some level. We're not sure what is going to be involved in this group. This is a great time to be a baseball fan in Baltimore.
And what do you think the addition of Corbin Burnes can mean on the mound?
Yeah, he's a... Steve, he's a number one starting pitcher, and you don't hear that very often anymore because there aren't many number ones left, because not only is his stuff unbelievably good, I mean, he throws a cutter at 97 miles an hour. So he has overpowering strikeout stuff, and yet a couple years ago, I'll be close on this, he went 40 strikeouts into the season before he walked anybody.
Right.
Think about that for a second. That's how good he was. That's how good he is. And this was a big risk for the Orioles because Burnes is a free agent after the season. And they might not be able to re-sign him, but they're going for it now. And they went and got him with two good young players, Joey Ortiz and D.L. Hall, who are really going to help the Brewers. But they got a number one starting pitcher without really hurting the number, you know, top three or four prospects that they have. So I would be thrilled if I were an Oriole fan knowing they have a number one starter to go on top of Kyle Bradish, Grayson Rodriguez, and all these other really good young arms.
Yep. And it's interesting because I think Juan Soto's in the same spot. I mean, you know, Juan Soto ends up going to the Yankees. What impact can he have on that lineup, and what impact can he have defensively on that team?
Well, that was a really subpar offensive team last year, Steve.
Yes.
They had
yeah.
too many strikeouts. You know, they relied too much on the home run. They didn't score any runs, and they were a weak offensive team last year with all that firepower. Now, it hurt, of course, that Aaron Judge was out for a good portion. But, you know, this is a guy, Juan Soto, who will change the entire look and approach of their offense, because he's not up there, you know, only walking, striking out, and hitting home runs. He is a great hitter, arguably the best hitter in the game. He, you know, his career on-base percentage is .420. The team's on-base percentage last year was .307. He's going to make a difference every day in that lineup, and he played all 162 games last year. He'll be thrilled to be back in the pennant race, and as important as anything, he's in a contract year. So if he has a fabulous Juan Soto year, maybe the Yankees just bowl him over, or certainly somebody else will. So there's a lot to play for. I think the Yankees offense will be demonstrably better with Juan Soto hitting second or third, wherever they put him.
Give me your read on the A's situation with Las Vegas. Where is that right now? Where do they end up playing as this moves forward?
Well, this is a very confusing conversation for me, because it just appears that the A's are going to end up in Las Vegas long term. The owners have already approved it, and yet the Las Vegas mayor came out yesterday and said, you know, they need to go back and make another pitch to Oakland. Was not exactly what you were looking to hear, but it's going to be really complicated. As of now, they're going to play in the Coliseum, or whatever we call it these days, because they have one more year on the lease. Then they're going to probably be 3 years where we're not sure where the A's are going to play. So I find this very unfortunate. No Major League Baseball team should have to go through something like this. But this is what happens when, let's face it, the team was not run properly from above, and now they're in a predicament where they'll have a new home in theory, a great new home in Las Vegas, but how do they get there in one piece? It's going to be very, very tricky.
And what about the Rays situation in St. Petersburg? Because they're talking about 86 acres of redevelopment in the historic gas plant area for a $1.3 billion ballpark. Is that still on track?
It appears to be, but with that situation also, I'm not going to believe anything until, you know, shovels are in the ground and real progress is being made, because there have been so many false starts on this. I think the Rays are going to stay in Florida. I think they're going to stay in that area somewhere, but I'm just not positive of what it's going to look like 5 years from now. But the bottom line is this, Steve, as you know, Oakland needs either a new stadium or a new city in which to play,
right.
And the Rays need the same thing. But it looks like they're staying, but the stadium is important, and there's still some hurdles to cross there.
Then what does that mean to the possibility of expansion, because these are still in gray areas?
Yeah, I'm in favor of expanding two more teams to have 16 in each league. However, there is no reason to expand until we're absolutely certain what's going to happen with the Rays and the A's. Bud Selig told me 15 years ago, if not longer, we have to figure out what to do with the Rays and the A's. And here it is 15 years later, and there's still confusion. So once they get those two teams completely settled, then I'm all in favor of expansion. But sorry, I don't think we should expand until we're positive that those teams are set.
And not only that, and also which markets might be available, because you don't know where they're going to end up moving to.
Right, precisely. We're not sure which markets will be out there. So still a lot of work to go on that.
Yeah, no question. Jose Altuve signed the 5-year deal with the Astros. Tim, I remember watching him in the New York Penn League with Tri-City. I was like, okay, he's a good player, you know. and then to see what he's become. Why is he, you watch, when you've watched him a lot, why is he as good as he is, considering you're not a big man of stature?
Right. Well, Alex Cora, who was an Astros coach years ago, told me, pound for pound, Jose Altuve is the strongest man in the major leagues. Wow. When you see him hit a ball over the train tracks and you recognize that he is an inch and a half taller than me, and for those who don't know me, I am really short, and he's an inch and a half taller than me, and he hits the ball over the train track. His teammate, Alex Bregman, looked at me during the postseason and said, Jose Altuve is the best athlete in the major leagues, and there is not a close second. He said he runs faster than anyone on our team. He jumps higher than anyone on our team. Pound for pound, he's stronger than anyone on our team. And it was just like an amazing scouting report of this guy. There's nothing he can't do. Now it appears he's going to be an Astro for life. And even though those who had trash cans and cheating and everything on their minds, Jose Altuve is going to be a Hall of Fame second baseman someday, and he's got an outside chance to get 3,000 hits. And I'm not sure I've enjoyed watching too many players more than I've enjoyed watching him. That's how dedicated he is to being great every day.
Well, this is the test he always passed with me. He's on deck against your team. You're like, oh, we can't let that guy get up. To me, that's the ultimate right there. I can't let that guy come to the plate. I can't.
Right, and especially in the postseason,
yes.
Like as we gauge all great players,
yes.
Are they at their best when they need to be at their best in the biggest games? That pretty much defines Jose Altuve.
And I know that I have to let you go. There's a certain time frame, and because of that, I'm going to let you go now. Thanks so much, as always, Tim, for your time. It's just fabulous.
Well, thank you, Steve. Talk to you soon.
The great Hall of Famer Tim Kurchin joining us on the show today. And today's show is brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Neil Coulong in the next half hour as we continue on News Radio 1070, WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The beverage supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. Six great flavors of slushies. And the pickle bar, led by the personal favorites, the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we are in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. We always feel it's part of the best part of the week when we have on Neil Coulong. Sir, always a pleasure. Welcome back.
You bet. As always, my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right. So this is something I talked with Ray Dittinger, the Hall of Fame writer. We talked about the state of the game today. Games in Spain, Brazil, Germany, England, Kazakhstan. No, not yet. And officiating and so forth. So let's have take a moment here. What is your take on the state of the NFL right now, even though the ratings have never been higher?
I think overall, let's put it this way. If you go back and call it a guilty dork pleasure of mine, but I'll go back and watch the AFC Championship game after the 2008 season, so January 2009, Baltimore at Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
It doesn't really feel like it was that long ago, but if you watch how they play the game, you'd be shocked at how different it is. And in that, I mean, you know, we don't need to be historians to see clearly why it changed and how it's changed. The NFL has had to recreate a large part of the game while keeping the shell intact. Now, you'll hear a lot of them say, you know, it's basketball on grass, and to some extent, you can understand why people are saying that. You know, I don't want to say a lack of contact. You know, you and I have discussed this a lot. If you've ever been on a sideline, it's not a lack of contact.
No, okay? No.
There are certain things that you just simply can't do anymore. Right. And this came up with DeMonte Casey against Indianapolis, the hit that he had on the Colts receiver. I forget who it was, but it was like, wow, I said at the time, like, he's going to be suspended for that. That's really bad. And every Steelers fan went completely nuts over it, saying that, oh, well, it's not the same game anymore. They're not allowed to hit anymore. It's like, you guys, look, we've been over this for the last 15 years, okay? It's been a while. You need to adjust how you're playing the game. That's the way it is now. But you can see the difference from that 15-year time period in comparison to now. The state of the game being as popular as it is today, I don't know if enough time has passed really flesh out what the reaction of a younger generation is going to be, not because of the violence, not because of the issues with contact that the game has, you know, tried to kind of work out of its product. It's more, we learn from the generation before us, and for them, the generation before them. You're passing it down from person to person. That's really kind of the root of fandom. You grew up with it. We usually wax nostalgically about watching games with our parents and, you know, being when you were a kid, this player did that. I wonder how much of that sort of false glory, if you want to call it that heroism exists in the younger generation today. I'm sure there will be some. You know, my daughter goes to school with kids that are wearing Patrick Mahomes jerseys, Lamar Jackson jerseys, things like that. You see it. I don't know how going to be in the next generation. I don't know how much more it's going to be passed down for a variety of reasons. You know, the future of anything is bleak, in my opinion. So for the game to keep up, it has to reach out to new markets. It's got to continue to reinvent itself, to remarket itself for other groups, other demographics that are going to invariably change. You can't rely on what works today, what happens today. But to the NFL's credit, I think in changing the game and in keeping up with a surge in technological influence, they've done a good job staying at the top, you know, staying in the spotlight. Weathering the storms that are going to come with any, you know, major American organization that's in the spotlight as intensely as the NFL is. So I think there's not an issue for the foreseeable future, but you do wonder if there's not another 15-year period of significant change. I wonder what the game will continue to look like once the next generation gets in. You see it now, not to be the old guy, but you see it in how they're playing, how they're tackling, or I should say not tackling. It makes you wonder how much more contact they can really take out of the game before it becomes, you know, flag, which, to be honest, is another product that the league is really pushing now. It makes you kind of wonder if this is not setting up for future generations. They just eliminate tackling completely and just play flag. Things like that, it shows that they're aware that there is a future issue. They are exploring what their image is going to look like to the next generation.
I will say this, though, about football, whether it's the college game or the pro game. And I know because Jack Ham has said to me once, he said to me 30 times, he says, "Geez, Steve, I don't know how you tackle in today's game." you know, compared to when he played. But I also feel that the game is, because it's so popular, is a target for some people. And because it's a target, I feel like they've adapted in certain ways because they're trying to save and preserve the game. And I do give them credit for that.
I would agree. Two things with that. One, if the players, quote unquote, know how to tackle either. I mean, at a literal level, they can do it. But there are situations in which it's going to be one thing or the other. And if they choose to go high, hit the guy in the head, they're going to pay for it.
Yeah.
Choose to go low, there's a good potential of a significant injury. And at an ethical level, the players don't really like that either.
That's right.
And we're going to hear them say, I don't know what to do. That's usually what they land on. My opinion, NFL is a league that was built by and it's regulated by defense attorneys. They're not interested in finding an answer. They are interested in finding somebody else to blame. And if they can put that on the players, they will. That's what they're doing. This is the result of years of negligence, things that they're culpable for that they don't want to have to pay for today.
Yep.
Sins of our fathers and all that. I see the message they're sending more as long as we could tell a judge and a jury, these are the steps that we took to make what's inherently a dangerous game, an inherently violent game, as reasonably safe as we could make it.
Mm-hmm.
We find them when they hit guys like this. Image issues that people are seeing, we're trying to take this out of the game. They're not going to say, we're responsible because this game is violent and we're putting it out for the hundreds of millions of people to watch. It's more, we don't really care so much. We just want to make sure we can't be found legally liable for a lot of this. And it's worked to this point. It's gotten them out of, significant punishment as far as class action suits go. They've been able to manipulate is probably the wrong word. They've been able to negotiate in the CBA through kind of interesting tactics, ways to write off any liability that they might have. Very political, very legal, I don't want to call it shady, but they clearly have intent of washing their hands of any responsibility of the product that they put out. So at the ground level, what we're really talking about is the instantaneous bang, bang hits on the field. I will say this, though, and I would be curious what Jack would say in response to it. There are some that I see that are just more examples of laziness than sheepness.
Yes, yes.
You know, he
brings
that
up.
You've got to hit him lower than that.
Yeah,
you can't go like that into his head, and you need to know that by now. Your generation now, the 22, 23, 24-year-olds, grew up only with this NFL. They don't know what it was like when James Harrison was just coming out and destroying people on the field.
Right.
They didn't see that firsthand. A lot of it is sloppiness and poor technique, and that splinters off into another issue. Getting into the college side of things, how much are they really teaching? You know, do they have the time to really go over technique when you have the five-star player that has this choice of 800 colleges across the country? He wants to go to yours because he's going to get on the field right away. He may not know what he's doing, but he's a great athlete, and the clock is ticking now. They might not even have him longer than a year anymore, let alone three until he's going to go pro. So I don't know if they get proper instruction. And it seems like there are a lot of defensive players who are out there that can mirror a guy perfectly down the field, but have no clue what they're doing on, coming up to support the run. They don't know how to tackle. They don't know how to wrap up. They're not sure what to do with their bodies. And a lot of that just looks simply like they haven't really been taught. And I don't mean that literally. It's just that they weren't grounded in it. You know, they didn't have to go through fundamental work because they're doing things that are going to get them into the NFL. Not a better football player when they're 19 years old.
Well, and Jack has talked about, he'll talk about technique. He says, you got to wrap a guy up. You just can't throw your shoulder in there. And he talks about that all the time. Because that's proper technique. That's not too high, too low. It's wrap and take to the ground. What have you thought about go ahead, Neil. Sorry.
If your mentality is to wrap up, you're naturally going after the waist. You're not going to chin strap the guy, and you're not looking to take his knee out. You can wrap up the waist, and if that's your mentality, getting your arms around the guy. But what they teach primarily is dislodge the ball. Then they're not going in with their shoulder looking to get their arms around the guy as much as they are looking to punch it out. And if you miss or it doesn't work, which it often doesn't, you see him slip away, and it's poor technique. It's poor form. It's tough to have both, but there are guys that need to be able to do that at the NFL level, that's for sure.
What have you thought about the officiating this year? It's finally done, and Sunday's game was fine, but what did you feel about the overall officiating of the game at this stage?
Here's the least popular opinion you're going to get on this show. I really don't think NFL officiating is that bad.
Mm-hmm.
And here's why. They don't get to make decisions on what happened based on what we see in replay, what we are almost crowdfunding opinions in social media, creating the outrage. We are hyper-focused on officiating because in many ways, I might argue, just very simply, we can see the game better than they can for where they are.
Yep.
In a lot of cases, that's true. You've got, I don't know how many cameras were at the Super Bowl this year, but it was a couple hundred in the past.
It was 165.
Yeah, that's when you have that many eyes in 4K definition, broadcast across an 85-inch TV, you're able to see things more clearly than the official who's running, who's distracted by the noise, who's under the microscope and has the pressure that they have. All of these things coming together, it's extremely difficult to hold them fully accountable to millisecond characteristics of plays that were never really a part of the scope of officiating in the first place. And this comes down again to a league of lawyers who have, in my opinion at least, incorrectly overcorrected problems as opposed to just kind of saying, you know what, this is the human element of the game. We can't see these things down to this level. Our ability, our desire to try to do that creates a bigger problem. And that's essentially what's happened. We try to over-regulate everything. We try to over-officiate everything. When some things, it's like, look, it's close. The guy's right there. Let him make the call. Mm-hmm. We're not going to get everything right.
I will bring up this because we're getting now to the stage where it's going to be the combines, pro days, and so forth. One of my knocks in certain areas that I've had with people who have made to do talent evaluations is that from 30,000 feet, I've felt they've used the combine too much. And I'd like to see more football players out there. And the one guy that had an interception in the game was Jair Brown. And, of course, if anybody's going to know how Jair Brown plays, I'll know him as well as anybody for obvious reasons. He played here at Penn State. He knows how to play. But in a combine setting, he was a 4.63 40 guy. So he ends up in the third round. But you can just watch him play. He knows how to play the game. And I feel like that player doesn't get as much of an opportunity because people are enamored with numbers, right or wrong.
Yeah, I mean, at the end, it's about the athleticism that he has. It's about the upside. It's about the potential. They feel that they'll be able to teach the player what the player needs to know. And whether they've learned that ahead of time or not seems to be less relevant. Now, you're getting into an era where, in my opinion, and anybody's opinion, I think, is worthy of discussion on this topic, you're going to have a lot of kids jumping from school to school and getting inconsistent messages, not hearing specifically what needs to be done.
Yep.
All of these things, it might create less strength at the mid to bottom level of the NFL. And I think you'll see that We saw a pretty significant special teams mistake in the Super Bowl. Things like that will come up when you're not getting enough reps to enough players who really understand every situation that can come up. And it's a game where you don't get several opportunities of live training to really pick it up. They don't play a whole lot of games. There's not a whole lot of live snaps, and it's tough to simulate a lot of those environments. And I think the strong, you know, you think of like the Senior Bowl is a big thing. A lot of that is marketing, but it always was, these are the best players who are going to be available because they're the most ready. They've received the most coaching. They've been in the weight room the longest. It's lessened in terms of, I don't want to say it's overall value, but there aren't as many prominent players. There are plenty of them, but not as many as there were 20 years ago. I would argue they're better athletes, they're better prepared athletes today, but they're not as good technical football players the way that they used to be.
Yes.
And I think overall you see that in the product of the game.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, you do have this the best athletically. This is the best the NFL's ever been. But in terms of how to play the game, I mean, like how to play the game, if I have a great athlete who knows how to play the game, that guy stands out dramatically over the crowd right now. That's how I view it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I wonder the direction in the future, how much different it's going to be, what they can do to mitigate that. I mean, it just it honestly seems like there is another sub-level that has some significance coming at some point. They're going to need to find guys, they're going to need to find more opportunities to get guys to play. And I wonder where that's coming from.
Yeah. And that part, I don't know. Because you know what? What's happening now, let's take the college game. What's really big in the college game and recruiting right now? Getting the 7-on-7s.
Yep.
I mean, you see a lot
of... Yep,
like,
and that's kind of the direction of the game,
yeah,
too.
Yep.
You know, I mean, line play obviously is critically important, but you need your receivers to work on running routes. You know, you need your quarterbacks to throw the ball in live situations against live defense. And the more of that comes up, I think that's kind of what it is. You know, there's value to that. Just in terms of, I hate saying the skill position guys, but you need to get them putting in the work in a live environment on a real field with live passing against real defense.
Well, we're coming up on part of the year that you really love a lot, and that is all the offseason movement. I know we never got to the Trubisky and so forth. We'll get to that next week. But appreciate it always, my friend. We have more snow than you do.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
The great Neil Kulong joining us on the show, brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks, they roast their peanuts. Fresh and out every day, pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Joining us next in the Sunbury Motors studio, Ray Dittinger. We'll talk with him in the next half hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing. They can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere.
wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. Six great flavors of slushies. And the pickle bar, led by the personal favorites, the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we are in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. We always feel it's part of the best part of the week when we have on Neil Coulonge. Sir, always a pleasure. Welcome back.
You bet. As always, my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right. So this is something I talked with Ray Dittinger, the Hall of Fame writer. We talked about the state of the game today. Games in Spain, Brazil, Germany, England, Kazakhstan. No, not yet. And officiating and so forth. So let's have take a moment here. What is your take on the state of the NFL right now, even though the ratings have never been higher?
I think overall, let's put it this way. If you go back and call it a guilty dork pleasure of mine, but I'll go back and watch the AFC Championship game after the 2008 season, so January 2009, Baltimore at Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
It doesn't really feel like it was that long ago, but if you watch how they play the game, you'd be shocked at how different it is. And in that, I mean, you know, we don't need to be historians to see clearly why it changed and how it's changed. The NFL has had to recreate a large part of the game while keeping the shell intact. Now, what you'll hear a lot of them say, you know, it's basketball on grass, and to some extent, you can understand why people are saying that, you know, I don't want to say a lack of contact. You know, you and I have discussed this a lot. If you've ever been on a sideline, it's not a lack of contact.
No, okay? No.
There are certain things that you just simply can't do anymore.
Right.
And this came up with DeMonte Casey against Indianapolis, the hit that he had on the Colts receiver. I forget who it was, but it was like, wow, I said at the time, like, he's going to be suspended for that. That's really bad. And every Steelers fan went completely nuts over it, saying that, oh, well, it's not the same game anymore. They're not allowed to hit anymore. It's like, you guys, look, we've been over this for the last 15 years, okay? It's been a while. You need to adjust how you're playing the game, and that's the way it is now. But you can see the difference from that 15-year time period in comparison to now. The state of the game being as popular as it is today, I don't know if enough time has passed really flesh out what the reaction of a younger generation is going to be, not because of the violence, not because of the issues with contact that the game has, you know, tried to kind of work out of its product. It's more, we learn from the generation before us, and for them, the generation before them. You're passing it down from person to person. That's really kind of the root of fandom. You grew up with it. We usually wax nostalgically about watching games with our parents and, you know, being when you were a kid, this player did that. I wonder how much of that sort of false glory, if you want to call it that, that heroism exists in the younger generation today. I'm sure there will be some. You know, my daughter goes to school with kids that are wearing Patrick Mahomes jerseys, Lamar Jackson jerseys, things like that. You see it. I don't know how going to be in the next generation. I don't know how much more it's going to be passed down for a variety of reasons. You know, the future of anything is bleak, in my opinion. So for the game to keep up, it has to reach out to new markets. It's got to continue to reinvent itself, to remarket itself for other groups, other demographics that are going to invariably change. You can't rely on what works today, what happens today. But to the NFL's credit, I think in changing the game and in keeping up with a surge in technological influence, they've done a good job staying at the top, you know, staying in the spotlight, weathering the storms that are going to come with any, you know, major American organization that's in the spotlight as intensely as the NFL is. So I think there's not an issue for the foreseeable future, but you do wonder if there's not another 15-year period of significant change. I wonder what the game will continue to look like once the next generation gets in. You see it now, not to be the old guy, but you see it in how they're playing and how they're tackling, or I should say not tackling. It makes you wonder how much more contact they can really take out of the game before it becomes, flag, which, to be honest, is another product that the league is really pushing now. It makes you kind of wonder if this is not setting up for future generations. They just eliminate tackling completely and just play flag. Things like that, it shows that they're aware that there is a future issue. They are exploring what their image is going to look like to the next generation.
I will say this, though, about football, whether it's the college game or the pro game. And I know because Jack Ham has said to me once, he said to me 30 times, he says, "Gee, Steve, I don't know how you tackle in today's game, you know, compared to when he played." But I also feel that the game is, because it's so popular, is a target for some people. And because it's a target, I feel like they've adapted in certain ways because they're trying to save and preserve the game. And I do give them credit for that.
I would agree. Two things with that. One, if the players, quote unquote, know how to tackle either. I mean, at a literal level, they can do it. But there are situations in which it's going to be one thing or the other. And if they choose to go high, hit the guy in the head, they're going to pay for it.
Yeah.
Choose to go low, there's a good potential of a significant injury. And at an ethical level, the players don't really like that either.
That's right.
And we're going to hear them say, "I don't know what to do." That's usually what they land on. My opinion, NFL is a league that was built by and it's regulated by defense attorneys. They're not interested in finding an answer. They are interested in finding somebody else to blame. Right. And if they can put that on the players, they will. That's what they're doing. This is the result of years of negligence, things that they're culpable for that they don't want to have to pay for today.
Yep.
Sins of our fathers and all that. I see the message they're sending more as long as we could tell a judge and a jury, these are the steps that we took to make what's inherently a dangerous game, an inherently violent game, as reasonably safe as we could make it.
Mm-hmm.
We find them when they hit guys like this. Image issues that people are seeing, we're trying to take this out of the game. They're not going to say, we're responsible because this game is violent and we're putting it out for the hundreds of millions of people to watch. It's more, we don't really care so much. We just want to make sure we can't be found legally liable for a lot of this. And it's worked to this point. It's gotten them out of, significant punishment as far as class action suits mm-hmm. go. They've been able to manipulate is probably the wrong word. They've been able to negotiate in the CBA through kind of interesting tactics, ways to write off any liability that they might have. Very political, very legal, I don't want to call it shady, but they clearly have intent of washing their hands of any responsibility of the product that they put out. So at the ground level, what we're really talking about is the instantaneous bang, bang hits on the field. I will say this, though, and I would be curious what Jack would say in response to it. There are some that I see that are just more examples of laziness than sheepness.
Yes,
he
brings that up.
You've got to hit him lower than that.
Yeah,
you can't go like that into his head, and you need to know that by now. Your generation now, the 22, 23, 24-year-olds, grew up only with this NFL. They don't know what it was like when James Harrison was just coming out and destroying people on the field.
Right.
They didn't see that firsthand. A lot of it is sloppiness and poor technique, and that splinters off into another issue. Getting into the college side of things, how much are they really teaching? You know, do they have the time to really go over technique when you have the five-star player that has this choice of 800 colleges across the country? He wants to go to yours because he's going to get on the field right away. He may not know what he's doing, but he's a great athlete, and the clock is ticking now. They might not even have him longer than a year anymore, let alone three until he's going to go pro. So I don't know if they get proper instruction. And it seems like there are a lot of defensive players who are out there that can mirror a guy perfectly down the field, but have no clue what they're doing on, coming up to support the run. They don't know how to tackle. They don't know how to wrap up. They're not sure what to do with their bodies. And a lot of that just looks simply like they haven't really been taught. And I don't mean that literally. It's just that they weren't grounded in it. You know, they didn't have to go through fundamental work because they're doing things that are going to get them into the NFL, not a better football player when they're 19 years old.
Well, and Jack has talked about, he'll talk about technique. He says, you got to wrap. You got to wrap a guy up. You just can't throw your shoulder in there. And he talks about that all the time. Because that's proper technique. That's not too high, too low. It's wrap and take to the ground. What have you thought about go ahead, Neil. Sorry.
If your mentality is to wrap up, you're naturally going after the waist. You're not going to chin strap the guy, and you're not looking to take his knee out. You can wrap up the waist, and if that's your mentality, getting your arms around the guy. But what they teach primarily is dislodge the ball. Then they're not going in with their shoulder looking to get their arms around the guy as much as they are looking to punch it out. And if you miss or it doesn't work, which it often doesn't, you see him slip away, and it's poor technique. It's poor form. It's tough to have both, but there are guys that need to be able to do that at the NFL level, that's for sure.
What have you thought about the officiating this year? It's finally done. Sunday's game was fine, but what did you feel about the overall officiating of the game at this stage?
Here's the least popular opinion you're going to get on this show. I really don't think NFL officiating is that bad. Mm-hmm. And here's why. They don't get to make decisions on what happened based on what we see in replay, what we are almost crowdfunding opinions in social media, creating the outrage. We are hyper-focused on officiating because in many ways, I might argue, just very simply, we can see the game better than they can for where they are.
Yep.
In a lot of cases, that's true. You've got, I don't know how many cameras were at the Super Bowl this year, but it was a couple hundred in the past.
It was 165.
Yeah, that's when you have that many eyes in 4K definition, broadcast across an 85-inch TV, you're able to see things more clearly than the official who's running, who's distracted by the noise, who's under the microscope and has the pressure that they have. All of these things coming together, it's extremely difficult to hold them fully accountable to millisecond characteristics of plays that were never really a part of the scope of officiating in the first place. And this comes down again to a league of lawyers who have, in my opinion at least, incorrectly overcorrected problems, as opposed to just kind of saying, you know what, this is the human element of the game. We can't see these things down to this level. Our ability, our desire to try to do that creates a bigger problem. And that's essentially what's happened. We try to over-regulate everything. We try to over-officiate everything. When some things, it's like, look, it's close. The guy's right there. Let him make the call. Mm-hmm. We're not going to get everything right.
I will bring up this because we're getting now to the stage where it's going to be the combines, pro days, and so forth. One of my knocks in certain areas that I've had with people who have made to do talent evaluations is that from 30,000 feet, I've felt they've used the combine too much. And I'd like to see more football players out there. And the one guy that had an interception in the game was Jair Brown. And, of course, if anybody's going to know how Jair Brown plays, I'll know him as well as anybody. For obvious reasons, he played here at Penn State. He knows how to play. But in a combine setting, he was a 4.63 40 guy. So he ends up in the third round. But you can just watch him play. He knows how to play the game. And I feel like that player doesn't get as much of an opportunity because people are enamored with numbers, right or wrong.
Yeah, I mean, at the end, it's about the athleticism that he has. It's about the upside. It's about the potential. They feel that they'll be able to teach the player what the player needs to know. And whether they've learned that ahead of time or not seems to be less relevant. Now, you're getting into an era where, in my opinion, and anybody's opinion, I think, is worthy of discussion on this topic, you're going to have a lot of kids jumping from school to school. And getting inconsistent messages, not hearing specifically what needs to be done.
Yep.
All of these things, it might create less strength at the mid to bottom level of the NFL. And I think you'll see that. We saw a pretty significant special teams mistake in the Super Bowl. Things like that will come up when you're not getting enough reps to enough players who really understand every situation that can come up. And it's a game where you don't get several opportunities of live training to really pick it up. They don't play a whole lot of games. There's not a whole lot of live snaps, and it's tough to simulate a lot of those environments. And I think the strong, you know, you think of like the Senior Bowl is a big thing. A lot of that is marketing, but it always was, these are the best players who are going to be available because they're the most ready. They've received the most coaching. They've been in the weight room the longest. It's lessened in terms of, I don't want to say it's overall value, but there aren't as many prominent players. There are plenty of them, but not as many as there were 20 years ago. I would argue they're better athletes, they're better prepared athletes today, but they're not as good technical football players the way that they used to be.
Yes.
And I think overall you see that in the product of the game.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, you do have this the best athletically. This is the best the NFL's ever been. But in terms of how to play the game, I mean, like how to play the game, if I have a great athlete who knows how to play the game, that guy stands out dramatically over the crowd right now. That's how I view it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I wonder the direction in the future, how much different it's going to be, what they can do to mitigate that. I mean, it honestly seems like there is another sub-level that has some significance coming at some point. They're going to need to find guys, they're going to need to find more opportunities to get guys to play, and I wonder where that's coming from.
Yeah, and that part I don't know. Because you know what? What's happening now, let's take the college game. What's really big in the college game and recruiting right now? Getting to 7-on-7s.
Yep.
I mean, you see a lot of...
Yep, and that's kind of the direction of the game,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yep.
You know, I mean, line play obviously is critically important, but you need your receivers to work on running routes. You know, you need your quarterbacks to throw the ball in live situations against live defense. And the more of that that comes up, I think that's kind of what it is. You know, that's there's value to that. Just in terms of, I hate saying the skill position guys, but you need to get them putting in the work in a live environment on a real field with,
yep,
with live passing against real defense.
Well, we're coming up on part of the year that you really love a lot, and that is all the offseason movement. I know we never got to the Trubisky and so forth. We'll get to that next week, but appreciate it always, my friend. We have more snow than you do.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Great Neil Coulon joining us on the show. Brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts. Fresh and out every day. Pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Joining us next in the Sunbury Motors studio, Ray Dittinger. We'll talk with him in the next half hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.